Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Richard Felix, the founder of Stunning, Retained, and Are My Sites Up, and we're going to talk about measuring user happiness and keeping them in place. This episode is brought to you by Tiny Reminder. Are your projects on hold and your invoices unpaid? This tool will play bad cop with your clients, so you don't have to. Sign up today for our forever free plan at tinyreminder.com. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Jane.
Thank you so much for making it today.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Fantastic. We're going to start with a questionnaire, and question number one is, what do you do for a living?
These days, I'm working on SaaS products that provide value to other businesses, particularly around dealing with churn. So I've done a lot of other things in my career, like iPhone apps and building apps for consumers, but I've kind of settled here. This has really clicked with me.
Awesome. Oh, then you have to share a little bit of your background story. How did you get there?
Do you want the long or the short version?
The medium size.
Okay. So when I was younger, I really loved to read. I still do. I literally read every book in my school library that interested me. And then I discovered computers when I was around second or third grade and put the two together. So I started reading everything I could about computers. And then I started taking computer courses in school, learning about, more structured languages like C, C++, Pascal, that sort of thing. And, eventually moved into web design because by the time I was a senior in high school, web design was getting really big. And then there were some local companies in town and even the mayor's office who needed websites. And my name kind of got around in town as the guy to come to build those websites, even though I just kind of discovered it myself, which is funny. But I ended up getting those jobs and my dad, told me I should make a business out of it. So I did. And I've been running my own business on the side ever since.
How old were you then building sites for your major?
I was 15.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, sitting in the mayor's chair in City Hall at his computer showing him stuff on the website. It was kind of surreal. And then after that, I started building web apps because I realized that with even more programming, like putting the web design and programming things together, I could actually make websites do stuff, which was amazing. So I started doing that. And the first real app that I built was an app called Hungry, which let people figure out where they wanted to eat. Like, you put in all your restaurants, and whenever you're ready to eat, it would kind of pick for you. And based on how you're feeling and what you're in the mood for, it was my first web app that I wrote in Ruby on Rails. It didn't really go anywhere financially, but it was... a good learning experience. It actually got me my first acquisition offer, which was really funny. Because there were companies who were building menu services that were interested in something like that. But I realized even at that point that I was incompatible with working for someone at that sort of level because the app was written in Ruby on Rails, but they wanted everything to be written in ASP, which was a Microsoft technology that I did not like. And I would have to rewrite Hungry in that and if I was going to work for them. And I was like, I can't do that. Like, if y'all are going to make crazy decisions like that and make me change things just because it's what you guys are familiar with, then I don't want to be part of that. So I actually rejected it. So after that, I started building SaaS apps for I realized that SaaS apps for consumers wasn't really working out because they're really hard to get traction with. Consumers basically buy based on how they're feeling or aspirations, while businesses buy on value. So if you are selling a consumer product and the consumer's aspiration goes away, then they are just going to cancel. Like if you're selling exercise programs or something like that, and they decide one day they don't want to do that anymore, then you've lost that customer. Well, it's easier to sell to businesses because they will buy based on the value that you're providing to them. So if you can just find a way to keep providing value to them, you'll keep them forever. So that's how I ended up writing apps based on business needs instead of consumer needs.
Yeah, that's golden truth that not all founders realize that. Really, you've got to find a way to tie your service to the way people make money and something they need.
Yeah, I am sure that you can build a successful consumer business if you have a lot of money or VC funding or whatever. But as a solo entrepreneur for most of my career, I really wanted to make money from day one, if possible, but maybe like the first month, because that's really important to keep the lights on. So I have to focus on actually getting money from my customers as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. What does your typical day look like?
I wake up at the crack of 1 p.m. most days, probably.
No.
Oh, yeah. Because I stay up late. I've always been a night owl.
1 p.m. I thought 1 a.m.
No, no. 1 p.m. If I'm home. So, and then I'll take the dog out, feed her, walk her, spend some time in the sun because I spend all of my time in front of a computer when I'm in the house, basically. So, I like to get some vitamin D in, and I do kettlebell swings in the morning to get my blood moving. I've figured out that it's the best way to get a quick full body workout. They're very effective, used by Russian bodybuilders way back in the day.
Those, yes, I know. Yeah. Right. The big ones.
Right. Just, I look kind of ridiculous in my office swinging those things, but it works. And then I get to my computer and I start looking through email and seeing what, I have to do for the day. I kind of have a list of things that I want to do every day that I plan out the day before. And I kind of leave my code in a place where I know, where to pick up. But a lot of days I get really derailed because of customer support stuff. So, after that, it kind of depends on what is in my inbox.
Right. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
The most and the least is kind of a double-edged sword, because what I enjoy the most is the freedom to go anywhere, that I want at basically any time. But that's also what I like the least, because of the nature of my business, that means that my customers are all over the world and they can contact me at any time as well. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's freedom, but it's also not freedom.
Have you considered delegating support?
Oh, yeah, I have a customer support person that I hired 2 years ago, about 2 years ago. And she's really good, but a lot of times there are technical things that she can't handle. They get pushed up to me. So I'm actually going to be looking to hire someone to take over like first line tech support instead of just them. Uh-huh. Because a lot of questions... We get two types of questions. A lot of questions are people who have trouble finding something in the interface, or they're just getting started, and it's easier for a non-technical person to walk them through that. But whenever it comes to things breaking or things not working the way they should, that always gets pushed up to me.
Right. What is your next big thing, project, whatever next?
My next big thing is an app called Retain that I've been working on with a business partner for a while. Basically, it helps businesses identify customers who are in danger of churning before they get to that point. Mm-hmm. So if a customer isn't getting value out of your service, you want to know before they actually click the cancel button, and Retain helps with that.
What stage is the app in?
We're pretty close to ending the beta. It's been in beta for a while. We built something that we thought worked well, and it did work well for our apps. And then, of course, we started getting people in the beta and seeing all sorts of other things and other people's production apps. And we started working out the bugs based on that and making sure that it actually solves the question that we set out to answer, which is, are my customers getting value? And so it's pretty close to done.
Right. Okay, let's discuss the main topic, measuring user happiness. And you need to measure user happiness so that you know who of them is likely to stay and who of them is likely to churn. How about you get our listeners up to speed with the churn and what it is and what kind of churn you can identify?
Okay. So the most common churn that I deal with is involuntary churn and voluntary churn. So I have built an app called Stunning that works with Stripe apps and customers to communicate with them whenever payments are failing, to let them know that their account might be in danger of getting canceled so that they can get it back in good standing. So that is an example of involuntary churn. Involuntary churn is when a customer has an account that might be canceled due to circumstances that they can't fully control. Because sometimes a credit card might get declined because the bank decides to be cranky that day, or they hit their spending limit for the day or something like that. Whereas voluntary churn is when a customer is not getting enough value out of your app, or they haven't gotten started well, which I guess is also tied into not getting value from your app, and then they decide to cancel for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
They literally go in and click the cancel button. That's more voluntary churn.
I think we are going to talk about voluntary churn because it's more exciting to discuss, and it's definitely human, and there are a lot of factors involved. As you're observing a lot of businesses, what's a typical churn for a SaaS product? Or maybe there is a range of numbers you can provide.
I've seen SaaS churn there's two types of SaaS churn, in my opinion. There's business SaaS churn, which I've seen be as low as 0% even, 0.1 to something like 10%, 15% for a successful SaaS business. The ones that are in danger, I've seen around 30%. But for consumer-based SaaS apps, I've seen as high as 60%. They come in and like every month, we're almost as many customers are leaving as are staying. This is crazy. Can you help us?
Is that measured in the amount of monthly recurring revenue or in actual user headcount?
The way I define it, it generally uses revenue, but revenue is usually tied to users, so you can't really have one without the other.
Yeah, absolutely. But the correlation is definitely not direct because of different pricing plans.
That is true. but I guess with Stunning, we mostly look at the MRR, the revenue side of it. So that's what I'm most familiar with.
I recall your brilliant talk at Bacon Biz last year when you were talking about that. So you have a specific method for measuring user happiness that you use for get retained, right? Can you give us a basics overview of that?
Well, things have kind of changed since my talk. What's kind of
really
what's funny is that after that talk, we started getting customers in to retain. So things have changed. What we were doing was measuring if a customer was happy, if a customer had gotten value, if they had added essential features. So those are basically features that for the customer to get any value out of your app at all, they need to add. So in the case of something like Basecamp, which is a project management tool, if a customer never adds clients or they never add projects, that is a huge problem because they'll never get value and they'll never finish a project. And then there are other metrics that you can use, like has a customer done sticky things that keep them involved in the app? So if you have an app like a blog publishing platform where a customer would want to potentially add a custom domain instead of using your own domain, and they have to upload a certificate to get that working, then if they go through all those steps and they do that, then they're more likely to stick around because they've seen enough value in your app to go through that process. We found that that is way too much information for people. When that idea met the real world, like, it does work. And I think that getting all the information does help, but, all of that is hidden behind the one true metric, I believe, which is the customer getting value out of my app or not? So we've been actually taking a whole lot of things out of Retain, and focusing on that one question. So for something like Stunning, where a customer signs up with us to recover churn for their customers, that is the value that they want to get. So if you sign up for Stunning, on the front page it says, we will help you recover money for your customers. And so when a Stunning customer is successful, that means that they have recovered money for their customers, and they're continuing to recover money for their customers. And an unsuccessful customer is one who has not done that, or where the revenue that has been recovered for them is going down. So all we want to do to know if a customer is in good standing with us or not is ask them how they're feeling every now and then, which we still do with Retain, and then see how much value they've gotten out of the service. If they haven't gotten any value out of Stunning, then we know that they are in danger of canceling. We need to offer them a coupon code, extend their trial, see why they're not successful, and get them successful. If they're a customer who has been around for a while and they were getting a lot of value and we see that the trend is going down, that is also a problem. We need to identify that and try to get them back in good standing and get them more value, whatever we have to do. And then customers who are in good standing, or customers who are happy with the service, because we know we've asked them and they're also getting the same amount of value or more value from the service every month. So we also want to measure how much value they're getting, because we know how much value they're getting in dollars for Stunning relative to the amount that they've paid to us, which is super important.
I would say the example of Stunning is a little bit unfair because it's the most transparent value proposition that you can get is the money recovered in dollars. But not all apps are like that.
That is true.
What do you do? What do you do? Do you pick a specific key metric, key performance indicator that you track the dynamics for?
Oh, yes, we definitely do. In the sign-up process, we work with our customers because we have a lot of experience looking at different SaaS apps to try to figure out what that one metric is for them, and we help them identify it and show them how to track it. And so if you'd have an app where customers get value that isn't monetarily measured, then we'll show you two graphs in Retain, and we'll show you the trends. Is their value going up, and is the revenue staying the same or going down? And if it's actually measured in money, then we'll show an overlay and actually show revenue that we've made for them versus money that they've paid to you. Because if a customer is getting less value than they paid to you, that's an immediate cancellation as soon as they figure that out. So you definitely want to be aware of that early.
Right. I would love to hear those examples of different kind of success metrics for different kinds of apps that you figured out.
Let's go back to the Basecamp example. In that case, we'd want to see how many projects had been completed. They have a bunch of clients. Clients isn't really important because you can have a bunch of clients and not actually be finishing projects. You sign up for Basecamp. On the homepage, they're basically saying you use this to have successful projects with your customers. And if you aren't doing that, then you're not getting enough value. Anything else you measure is, I think, noise at some level, because if your customers aren't doing that one thing that was promised to you, then that was promised to them when they signed up, then they're not getting value and they are potentially going to cancel. It's hard to think of others right now, but that's basically what I mean when I say we're gonna try to measure the one true metric. Whatever is what. If you listen to the talk that I gave at Bacon Biz, basically it was saying, look at these homepages of companies. They promise this value on the homepage. How can they determine if they're continuing to provide that value? So that usually gives you a key, place to start in determining if your customers are getting the value that you promised to them.
Yeah, that's a great technique. Actually, that has a lot to do with onboarding, because essentially your goals with retaining customers is very similar to onboarding them. It's just with onboarding, they have to experience for the first time, and with retaining on the regular basis.
Right. Basically, you want to make sure that the value that they got when they were successfully onboarded, they continue to get, because a successful customer is a happy customer, and happy customers don't cancel.
Right. They're users with multiple different life situations, and sometimes, for example, in Basecamp, let's keep on rocking with Basecamp, let's imagine they have a break in the client flow and they don't use Basecamp for a few months, but then they are kind of going back when the client is back or something like that. What do you do to kind of incorporate those natural cycles into your measurements, or is there a way to?
With Retain, we're doing something called triggers. So when a customer is in some sort of circumstance that you set up, you can say if a customer hasn't received value for this long or something like that, we can have something just get sent to you so you can look at it. So you can tell if the customer is having seasonal issues or something like that, if that's the kind of business that you have. Or you can have something go out to the customer that isn't throwing out a bunch of red flags, just kind of ask them if they need any help, just so you can start a dialogue. I think a lot of us like to hide behind our computer screens and not really talk to customers, even though they're the ones who pay the bills. So a lot of times getting the conversation started at the right moment helps out a lot. And then even if the customer isn't having issues, at least you've built a relationship with one of your customers. And relationships with your customers is a very important thing to have when you're trying to retain them anyway.
Right. There is a lot of information out there about how to do customer interviews when you are doing customer development, when you're just learning from new or potential customers. But what's the best way to interview that existing customer who's doing something with your app already? Like, what's a typical scenario to measure their happiness?
With Retained, it starts off simple. We have a little pop-up in your app that lets the customer pick how they're feeling about your app at a particular time. And we run those surveys from time to time based on the activity that we see in your app. We try to be smart and not bug customers about it too much. So that gives you kind of a trend for each customer to let you track how they're feeling. And then based on that, you can actually reply to those and say, hey, I noticed you weren't feeling that great about stunning today. Is there anything I can help with? Or it'll prompt you to go and look at their account and see issues that they might have before they actually turn into something that would make them cancel.
Mm-hmm. So you actually start a conversation with a small thing. How do you allow users to opt out of this service, or do they have to answer anyways? And it doesn't go away.
oh no, they can definitely opt out. There's a button on the thing that says, don't ask me about this anymore. So they can definitely opt out.
I wonder what's the conversion rate, how many people decide to give this feedback or not. Because such feedback tools, like on their own, your system is way more complex, but there are different other tools about measuring user happiness, like microsurveys. What is the conversion rate?
We've seen 50-60% of customers do it because I think it's because it's very low friction. Like, we're not asking them to type anything into a box. They can just click, one of three faces that shows how they're feeling, and that's it. Like, they don't have to do anything else at all. So it's really simple. So that tends to help with conversion rates. Like, the less the customer has to do, the less work or perceived work, the more conversion you'll get.
When you have signs of the user that's likely to churn, what can the founder do besides reaching out?
I really think that's the first step, because you won't know you won't know exactly why they're having issues unless you reach out, because every customer is different. So that's definitely where I always like to start. And then I let them tell me in their own words what the problem is, because sometimes it's just that they didn't realize that we had a feature that we actually do have. Sometimes it's something that builds into a larger problem. Say, something that, it's on the dashboard that always, doesn't seem to be reporting the right data for them, even though it is, and they just need it explained, or, some page in the app is slow for some reason, but only for them, which doesn't really show up in overall metrics, but it, because it's something that's tied to their account. So they'll get slowly fed up with that one issue every time they use that page, but they won't open a support ticket to let you know about that. So actually talking to them to find out those little things that turn into big things eventually, because one day they're in the wrong mood and they sign up and that page is slow and they're like, screw this, I'm out of here, and they cancel their account. you want to know about that in advance. And the only real way to know, I think, is by talking to them. You can use tools to figure out what they've done in your app and if they're being generally successful, but the best way is to talk to them, because there's a lot of things that you can't actually measure because you don't even know that you should be measuring them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you measure the productivity of your predictions? Meaning, most likely if you do display problems, the risk is very high, but have you observed users churn even if their metrics were great, according to your predictions?
Oh, yeah. Nothing is 100%. We just want to show you customers who potentially might be in danger so that you can reach out to them and start having conversations if you need to, and know who to keep an eye on, because a lot of people are busy. But what was the question again? I feel like I got sidetracked.
some cases that can't be predicted with your app, maybe? For example, when people churn and the situation couldn't be just in metrics.
Oh, yeah. So sometimes customers cancel because their business shuts down, you know?
Right.
There are definitely other reasons that can be predicted. Or they cancel because their business isn't as successful as they wanted to, or they have issues at home and they need to shut the business down. We definitely see some of that. And so the point is not really identifying everybody and letting them know whatever reasons there might be for the customer canceling. The goal is just to let people know who is most likely to cancel so they can keep an eye on the customers they need to keep an eye on.
There's a whole toolbox of different cancellation methods, ranging from automated one-step cancellation to, like, let's say, a cancellation wizard, where you have to explain why, and up to fully manual cancellation when you have to email support to do that. Do you have any opinion on any of these philosophies?
We were using an app called Less Churn for a while, I think we still will be in the future. I like what they do, where they give customers options to pick what they want to do when they're canceling, so they can choose to continue using your service at a discounted rate for a little while, or get help immediately from a founder of the company, or just cancel their account. I like when a customer is given options to kind of solve the problem themselves instead of just hitting the cancel button. Because a lot of customers might appreciate the options, because sometimes customers cancel just because the product costs too much for them at the time or something like that. And if you can head that off at the pass and keep that customer around, they'll be a happier customer and more loyal to you in the future. And it only costs you a discounted rate for a few months or whatever.
Definitely. And there is also a feature that's not present everywhere, but something like freezing your projects for a very low dollar rate or for free might be a good way to retain a client.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We don't really... Well, I guess we do that. I was going to say we don't really do that. We do. It's called pausing your account. So if a customer is unhappy with the way Sunday is working out for them and they go to cancel, we do give them the option to pause the account. Because maybe it's just something seasonal in their business that they need to correct before they can start really retaining customers. And we will pause it for 6 months for free. And basically we just disconnect their app from Stripe so we don't get new events, but they can still use their account as they would normally.
Mm-hmm. I would like to get your opinion on a question that many founders kind of ignore. So the idea is, as soon as they're paying and even might be not getting the value out of my app, I'm fine. So this is definitely not true. The philosophy should be different. Should be, I don't want your money if I'm not helping you, or something like that.
Oh yeah, most definitely. A lot of people, and I was as well when I was starting out, I was just happy that customers were paying me money. And I was like, if I talk to them, maybe they'll cancel just because, like, I didn't even know what reasons I was making up in my brain. Like, I just was happy that people were paying me. And I was like, I don't want to mess this up. So let me not say anything to them. I'm just happy that I'm getting the money. And like, I'm just going to keep doing this service. And hopefully people will keep paying me. But, yeah, I think it's really good to figure out, if your customers are getting value and try to get them to that value as quickly as possible, because that definitely helps you retain customers in the long run. If you really want to have a business that runs for years, you want customers who are happy and are getting value. Hopefully the value is going up so that they are happy with your service, and they'll hopefully be referring other people to your service because they're so happy.
Wrapping up our conversation, if you were to give one piece of advice to founders who want to lower their churn rate and increase customer happiness, what would that be that they can do immediately?
Definitely start talking to your customers more. However you do that, I feel like a low friction way, like what we built into Retain, is useful. Basically where we ask them not to really type anything in. They can just kind of let us know how they're feeling, so we can start a conversation based on that. And then that generally will start a bigger conversation that lets you know things about your app that you might not have discovered that are pain points, without having to go through the pain of getting the cancellations.
Right. There are probably multiple ways to, instead of using survey tools, there are a lot of workarounds. You can use Intercom to trigger those meaningful conversations with your customers, or use lifecycle emails as an alternative. Any kind of conversation strikers, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Lifecycle emails are super important. And I guess Intercom is just an in-app version of lifecycle emails. With tools like Drip or Intercom, you can have emails go out for specific triggers. So you can have something like, a customer has been with me for 3 months. Let me just check in with them and see how things are going. But you probably want to check in earlier than that just to see if they're actually getting value. But yeah, definitely some simple conversation starter. You could send them a 3-sentence email that requires a yes or no and start a really deep conversation based on that. You know, it's all about starting that conversation.
Can you give us a brief overview of available in-app analytics tools? Let's say I use Heap Analytics for Tiny Reminder. Any other alternatives that you're aware of?
I know that Mixpanel is usually preferred by a lot of people that I talk to, because it has been around for a while and it's been getting better and better. And with the founders that I talk to, they say that Mixpanel provides very accurate metrics where some other tools that they've used in the past have not. I don't really spend a lot of time dealing with analytics tools for instrumenting my app as far as it relates to customers, just because I feel like that's noise and I'll get bogged down with a lot of things that I don't need to get bogged down with. If I'm just measuring value, that tends to work.
That's right. All right. Thank you so much for amazing advice. Where can people find you online?
They can find me at richardfelix.com. That's Felix like the cat. And or rfelix on Twitter. And I think those are the best two places to find me.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for joining us today and for amazing insights for the founders, and hopefully it will help us all to keep customers happy.
No problem. I hope that it helps people out there as well.
Have a great day. Thank you.
You too.